I'm Linda from Tilburg for Bears News. Few people have the vision and determination to transform desolate land into thriving ecosystem. But Adrian Gardner is one of them. He has just released a book written by Dean Allen on his journey of rewilding the Eastern Cape. And we're really honored today to have Adrian Gardner in the business studio with us. Hi, Adrian. So lovely to meet you.
Well, you know, your business studio and the things that you post, I mean, they are so, I can't wait every morning to open them to see what's new on it. It's just something, I think, the initiative is as good as what I did in rewilding, because you're keeping us all wildly alive during the day with all the news that's picked up all over the world. So thank you for that. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you and tell you a little bit about my journey.
Let's talk about that. Can you pinpoint a specific moment that convinced you to move forward with turning land into a wildlife destination despite its bleak state?
I think, thank you for that, is that it's really the history of how I grew up. You know, I was born in Zambia, then I went to school in Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, and then went to the University of Cape Town. And that was many years ago, 1962. My first thing were obviously working for SPAR here, and then we created a cash and carry wholesale business, which we sold about 5 years. And then I had a bit of money, and I said, now I want to go on my own. So I went on my own and started in building swimming pools, which developed into construction and roadworks and all sorts of things. And in those days, you know, the tax laws were quite lenient. If you made money in one business, you could put it into another. And I was always keen to go farming, because of my background in Zimbabwe. There, my dad was in charge of 5 game ranches, which were owned by an English company, one of which was 365,000 acres, 150,000 hectares, which had its own game reserve and cattle and sheep and whatever else. And so I had it in my blood to, this business of nature. So we used the tax advantage to go into horse racing. And I was on the breeding side. My partner at that stage, we had a very successful crane and construction business. He was more involved in the racing side. I wanted to be involved in the breeding side. So we started a stud farm in Plettenberg Bay. Everybody laughed at us and said it would never work. That isn't the traditional breeding area for horses. But anyway, we had the sort of luck that sometimes you have when we had 8 Group 1 winners in the year, Horse of the Year, Filly of the Year, and Sprinter of the Year. So sort of put us on the map. Then the whole tax structure changed, and I got an offer to buy the farm. And we managed to put our horses into a public company, which Sydney Press had started, who was the founder of Edgar's. So that's how I got out of the horse business. And now I had some money and farming, and I said, you know what? I want to go. And then I was almost 50 years old. I want my patch of Africa. And I went back to Zimbabwe, and I went to the traditional areas of South Africa. And I realized soon, and thankfully met somebody who said, go and have a look at a farm nearby Port Elizabeth. And I looked at that. It was only 2,500 acres, 1,200 hectares. And then I decided to read the history. And thank goodness, a man called Skeed had really documented what was here when the 1820 settlers came in. And you know what? If you look at what was here and the number of species and the carrying capacity on the land, the Kruger Park should have been here, because it was totally sad that everything here had virtually been knocked down. To 11 elephants were left. Otherwise, all the lions were gone. Everything was gone. And that was the start of Ada Elephant Park, where they kept those 11 elephants, and they started. And then, you know, I looked at this farm, and I then did this, and I thought to myself, you know what? If I can just get enough farms next to me. And it wasn't long before I had about 12,000 hectares. And I thought to myself, now I need to create a private nature reserve and put back what was here, the big 5. And everybody again laughed at me and said it would never work. It took 10 years to get them all back, because I had to get the breeding up before you could really release lions so they could hunt and everything. And by the year 2000, it was working. So we started it in 1989 when I bought the first farm, and that was, you know, in troubled South Africa, opened in 1992, and then obviously freedom and everything came in 1994. And I can tell you now that my history has taught me that unless you get proper endorsements from the right people, things won't work. So as I said to you earlier, negativity of the surrounding farmers and neighbors who are saying this would never work. So I got hold of Dr. Ian Player, you know, the brother of Gary Player, and I would call him the Attenborough of Southern Africa. He saved the white rhino from extinction, and he was really head of all the parks in Natal, and I got him to come and see what I was doing. And he looked at it and he said, we're one of the first private enterprises that are turning abused land, cattle and sheep into game. And he was started and he endorsed what I was doing. And then he introduced me to incredible conservationists all over the world. And then it really started to work. And that's how we came to start Shamwari. And Shamwari is a Shona word from where I came from in Zimbabwe, for friend. And Port Elizabeth was known as a friendly city. So I called it Shamwari.
Well, many people doubted your vision in 1989. So what kept you pushing forward, even though some people said you were crazy?
I think that, you know, the publicity that we were getting and the endorsements, you know, and I was starting to get real film stars were coming. John Travolta, Brad Pitt, and, you know, Tiger Woods, and all sorts of people were coming to us. And I was making the most of that. The vision grew by the endorsements that these people were giving me and the experience that they had, because we were the first Big Five reserve in Southern Africa to be malaria free. So my competitors up in the northern provinces said, you shouldn't advertise negatives and saying you're malaria free. So I said, that's no problem. I'll tell them they can get free malaria if they go to you. So anyway, that got them a bit roused. So we had a lot of, I call them, you know, specialities that nobody else had. We had our own individual, the number of species, the people that were coming to see us, the people that endorsed us. You know, that gives you the sort of great confidence about really wanting to be a success. And I think the proof of the success is that there are now 16 equivalents of Shamwari in the Eastern Cape. I sold Shamwari in 2008 to Dubai World. And the reason for that was that they wanted to take my model. I sold them 70%, wanted to take my model all over Southern Africa. So I got very involved with them in Rwanda. I'm still in Rwanda, in Zimbabwe. We went and looked in Senegal where they had interests and all the rest of it. And then 2008 came and, you know, the world collapsed and they changed their whole outlook about where they were going to spend money and everything. So I got out of it then, but I kept my lodge called Founders Lodge with traversing rights over Shamwari. So we call that where it all began. So if you come to what I consider that anybody coming to the Eastern Cape for the first time should come and see is that Founders Lodge, because we've got the museum there of all the people that came there, the history of it and everything. It's small, it's intimate, it's 7 rooms. And I have a private carriage there that I used to go around South Africa in, and I've just parked it there that people can spend a night in. You know, and in the year 2000, when I had, you know, obviously released the Lions Net, we had 5 properties in our portfolio. We had the Great Saxon Hotel, which I opened in Johannesburg. We had Steenberg, the winery and hotel there. We had a Lake Pleasant on the Garden Route. Had a great property in Zambia at the Vic Falls, Stanley and Livingston. And I had a property called Halliards in Port Alfred. And I now wanted to create a brand. And then, you know, again, my team came up with these, you know, the normal platinum collection, this, that, and all the rest. And I said, no, I'm not interested. So I got Ian Player to help me. And Ian was staying with me. And he came down in the morning in breakfast and he said, you know, you asked me last night to think of a name. He said, I think I've got a name for you. And he thought about the people who had influenced him in his life. Mainly they were in Kubu Mtumbela, his guide and mentor in in his parks in Umfolozi and Natal. And then he thought of the Bushmen, because he was very close to Sir Lawrence van der Pos, whom he introduced me to. And Sir Lawrence was very involved with the Bushmen. And, you know, that they used to be hunters, travel to hunter, you know, they'd move from camp to camp, a Bushman, to find their food. And wherever they went, there would be a praying mantis there. And the mantis looked over them and he said, you let your properties, because they're all so diverse and far from you, the manager look, I call it the Mantis Collection, which we created. And we then created the acronym Man and Nature Together is Sustainable. It's been, I think, a really great journey. And the positivity of it all is really related to you know, the people that have followed and seen. Because the best example that I give to people, and when I put those 15 farms together, which made up about 20,000 hectares of Shamwari, is there were 16 people employed. Today, between Shamwari and Founders, we employ over 500 people on those farms. That's without the multiplier effect of the car hire, the transport of getting them there, of air tickets, of food and everything else. So it just shows you that wildlife done properly, like it's done, you know, in East Africa and other parts of Africa, that's our biggest asset, is our wildlife. But you've got to get community endorsement. Ian Player always said to me, without the community, believe me, conservation will not work. Because if they don't understand the value of it, they want the land, they want the animals are there to eat. So it's a journey that we've still got a long way to go with. And unfortunately, there are a lot of foundations that are now backing the work that we do. You know, I got Ian Player to bring the Wilderness Foundation to the Eastern Cape, where its head office is, and run by a great guy called Andrew Muir, who came. It's probably about the second or third biggest in South Africa today.
If there's a single moment that you, or a moment that you could single out about what you've done, what would it be? Would you be able to pinpoint on something specific that you think that, yeah, I did that well?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's quite an interesting question, is that just recently we launched a book called The Man Who Changed the Landscape. And, you know, it's sort of a history of what happened there. And I think that, you know, it took a long time to do. And Dean Allen, an author, did it for me and interviewed people all over the world that were involved. And I think by just getting the story out there of what we've done, we had a great book launch with, you know, all the people that had been involved with me over the last 30 years or so. And, you know, the journeys that they've come and how it's changed their lives. So I think the thing that's impacted mostly on me is just the lives that I've managed to change. You know, and where, for example, at one launch came there, there was a barman that worked at a hotel in Plettenberg Bay. And I took him out of that and he became a head ranger and he works in the maintenance department now. He's a changed guy. And there are many of those. Most importantly for me is, which I haven't mentioned, is that I was lucky enough to find out that there was a university in Holland called, it was called Stenden. And I got them to come and open a university in South Africa, and I got them to open it. I wanted them to do it in, you know, Grahamstown's famous for its education and everything. So we did it in Port Alfred, and we created a franchise from Stenden in the Netherlands. And it's the only university in the world where you can do a semester on wildlife conservation or lodge management and that sort of thing. And it's been successful. We're just celebrating our 20th year. I did have equity. I gave it up and said I'd rather the profit was used to give bursaries to kids and that sort of thing. So I managed to put through a lot of disadvantaged kids through that and the lives that they've changed. So I think that's the sort of thing that really answers your question, is what are the moments that I can really reflect on. And the moments are obviously when we released the lions, you know, brought them back after being out of here for 150 years, bringing back some of the other species. But I think more importantly is really changing the lives of people who had never have an opportunity to have an education, be involved in conservation, and to learn about what this planet is and how important it is that we try and save it.
So as you enter your eighth decade, how do you reflect on your legacy? What do you want future generations to take from your journey?
There's a very interesting project that we're busy with at the moment. And again, you know, I'm being laughed at and, you know, most people think it won't work. Is that, you know, London, I think, is famous for Hyde Park, New York for Central Park. So we've created a game park between Port Elizabeth and Uitenhage, or as they call now, Kobega and Kariga, 3,000 hectares, where we're rewilding animals. So animals that are in captivity that come to us, we've just done a very successful rewilding of some cheetah, and we now want to create what we call a lion safe haven, and we've had lots of meetings on it. I've been involved with the ministerial task team, because I'm sure a lot of people don't know that the 8,000 lions in South Africa in captivity for breeding for bone purposes and canned hunting. So we're trying to eliminate that. So that's a project that we're very busy with. So, you know, it's a road that we're traveling, and we've been successful. We've done our first rewilding of cheetah. We've got some elephant there. We've got the buffalo there. The only one that I can't put there, I think, is the rhino, because, you know, the poaching. But I'm right next door to a community, and we've got them really involved in all the work that we're doing there. So we will see.
The book charts your journey, but it seems your journey is just going on and on.
It you know, that's the sadness of it, is something crops up every day, and we soon realize that there's still more to do. So like my friend Ian Player and many others, look at David Attenborough. He's turning 99 now, and he's still working and still trying to save the planet.
He is.
And I think the inspiration for my life is to see, you know, the lives that I'm changing and the people that really want to make sure that this journey continues. So the only way it is I've got to be able to influence people. Fortunately, my families are very keen to see that it happens, but there's a lot of work to do, because the human, meant to be the most intelligent animal in the world, is not making it easy for us. We really are struggling, but we've got to teach them the value, especially in Africa. I mean, where else in the world do you have what we've got? It's forget about our gold and platinum and all the rest of it. We've got this incredible asset of wildlife.
Does the government realize that? Do you have a good relationship with the government?
You know, they've got other priorities, obviously. But certainly with the ministerial team that are involved in conservation and parks and that sort of thing, we work hard with. But, you know, I understand them. You know, when you consider that just in our province alone, we've got a 42% unemployment. You know, our thing is not really top of the agenda. But, you know, we try and get a message across. It's not easy. It's not easy in a lot of places. The politics is different. They've got different agendas. They work on things where they get votes, you know. So it's I've come to realize that in life. So, you know, I just do what I've got to do and try and change people's thinking.
This vision that you have for the Eastern Cape, what would you like the Eastern Cape eventually to be, or this national Eastern Cape Park that you are envisioning?
You know, unfortunately, I don't believe I'll see it in my life, because it's quite a difficult one. We're having a lot of discussions with, obviously, different farmers to drop their fences and see if we can create this corridor from Plettenberg Bay to Graaffreinet. And if we can get that corridor created, and we've looked at it all, we've got all the farms there written down, it's possible. But to do that would be something, it would be 1.5, if not twice the size of Kruger. Can you imagine it? But, you know, there's certainly, and the Wilderness Foundation and other foundations are involved. They're active in it. They want it to happen. And I think that it will happen. But unfortunately, I don't think I will see it, you know, because it's not an easy one. But the discussions are happening. They've employed people full-time to influence it. We've got, as I said to you, Global Humane. Worked with Tusk over years. You know, all these great international institutions, just to get them to all get on our back and just say that what we are doing or trying to do is very important. So, and we've got to make sure that all the communities are behind us. So that is a vision that I'd love to see, because then I think that is a legacy. That's the real legacy. We've created the kindergarten. We've still got to get to high school.
And the book will be available worldwide?
Yeah. So Paul's bringing a whole lot back to London, and then we're just working out how we get it. But yeah, I think it's a start.
Adrian Gardner, what you've achieved is remarkable, and we're looking forward to see what else is happening and how this vision of yours can be realized. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Well, as I said to you in the beginning, it's a real pleasure to be involved with your organization, with all the people that you managed to interview worldwide and the following that you've got. So I hope you'll be able to take this interview at some stage and use it. But just that, you know, I just know that so many people follow your organization, and I want to use the opportunity of saying well done. Please keep up the good work, expose all that we're doing wrong, and let's make this place a better place to live in. Thank you.